Today on the PC Gamer Podcast, of all of the games announced at E3 that we're not sure are coming to PC, which one do we most want to see on our platform? Scrolls, the new game from Mojang, is out, and several of us have played it. Plus, we answer your listener questions, playlists, and more. Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 356 for the week of June 20th, 2013. I'm your host this week, TJ Hafer. I am a space pirate of some kind or something like that. And joining me this week is PC Gamer Managing Editor Corey Banks.
Hey TJ, how's it going?
Not too bad. How's it going with you?
Doing well.
PC Gamer Intern Jake Godin.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And PC Gamer Intern Ben Kim.
Hello.
I said PC Gamer more times than I probably needed to. It's kind of implied that we are all at PC Gamer because this is the PC Gamer Podcast.
It's that branding. You're right. Just trying to get that branding in front of everybody.
PC Gamer.
Yeah. Just
it's all about that
TM.
Branding.
Yep. That PC Gamer branding. Exactly. So we're not going to talk too much more about E3 this week. It's been over for a week and it's been talked to death probably on every corner of the internet, but our own intrepid Tyler Wilde has put together a list of every game that was announced at E3, and whether it's basically three categories, we know it's coming to PC, it might be coming to PC, or it's probably not coming to PC.
It's an incredibly comprehensive list, actually.
It is.
It's important to have that because with all the consoles dominating that conversation, it's very important that we all remember that the PC's still here and not going anywhere, and that most of the games that are only going to get like huge marketing push on Microsoft or Sony's platform are also going to be available to us.
Right.
So the big one on that list that is the biggest maybe is The Division, mm-hmm. right? And I'm really interested to see. I hope in the next week or so maybe we change this because it already has like 94,000 signatures on a petition for
right.
Ubisoft to bring uh-huh. this to the PC. There's not really a lot of historical context for a Tom Clancy game not coming to the PC, right?
Not that I know of. It seems like even the ones that are like clearly more console geared, like Hawks and stuff like that, have all mostly come to PC.
They all end up on there. So it's really interesting that they're being cagey, that Ubisoft is being cagey about whether the game's going to make it. I got my money that says that we'll have it on the PC within 6 months of when it comes out on the consoles.
Right. I would agree. I mean, it's got MMO mechanics. It's got, you know, a lot of what we would think of in the current gen as PC-centric features. You know, the other maybes we had on that list are, of course, Bungie's Destiny, Fez 2, Metal Gear Solid 5, which I would say is pretty much an outside chance.
Maybe.
And then Peggle 2 and Star Wars Battlefront, which I'd say are both probably safe bets.
If we don't get Peggle 2, I might riot. I might burn the building down. I might march on... Well, I'll probably go to like a taco truck or something, but I'll be really angry about going to get a taco.
That will be your red stapler if Peggle 2 does not come to PC.
What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Isn't Metal Gear Solid 5 the first Metal Gear Solid game that came out like on both 360 and PS3?
The first multi-platform?
I know there have been other Metal Gear Solid like remakes and HD collections that came out on other consoles as well, but I feel like it's the first time it came out on the Xbox One and PS4 simultaneously, so there's probably a chance it'll come to PC.
Maybe. I mean, there's definitely been enough noise about the Metal Gear Solid series that I could see it moving to the PC. What do you think, Jake?
I mean, I think I could see Metal Gear Solid coming to the PC, possibly. I don't know. The one I'm really looking for, hoping for is The Division, of course, because it reminds me a lot of DayZ. Corey's moving my mic and stuff.
Get on the mic.
I'm on the mic. But The Division, I would really like to see it come to the PC just because, like I was saying, it reminds me of DayZ and that kind of community that formed around DayZ. I could see the exact same thing happening in Division. And whereas, I mean, the Division looks like it'll be more polished too. So
I think it's obvious that Division's going to be coming. Ubisoft just baiting out like free publicity by saying, sign this petition to get the game to come out on PC.
But it's working, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, but I'm saying like I'm
the smart move on their part when you
sure
think
about it.
Going
to come out no matter what.
And I mean,
versus like Battlefront, which has a pedigree of being on consoles, and the second one was really bad. I feel like that's more of a struggle.
Was Watch Dogs announced for...
Watch Dogs is coming to PC.
Yeah, Watch Dogs
would
definitely be on PC.
Right away when it was announced last year, was it?
I don't think it was.
It was confusing
to announce
it.
It seems like it was pretty soon after they announced the game that we knew it was coming to PC.
Well, it's a similar situation where mm-hmm. you got to believe that it's going to be... Especially with Ubisoft having a really strong presence on the PC.
Yeah.
They want to push their Uplay platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes a lot of sense there. The biggest maybe here on this list for me is Destiny. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It previously Bungie had made it sound like, oh, of course we'll be on the PC. It's totally on its way. But with the big push on the next gen consoles, next gen with the big air quotes, they were really hesitant to say if it was gonna make the transition or not. My guess is it will, but if as far as timed exclusives go, I bet that's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of the next gen consoles kind of have. The whole like. Always online, like multiplayer. You can jump in. You can jump out.
It's gone now, man.
I mean, it's getting the point where it's a lot like the PC, and I feel like it would make sense to keep it on the console rather than the PC.
Maybe
I don't know.
Why?
Because it's getting so much. Like the next gen consoles are kind of seeming like they're going towards what a PC should. Kind of what a PC is.
Well, they
like.
Backtracked on that like yesterday or something. Xbox One no longer will require you to be always online.
Yeah,
they're going back to.
But
giving a disc to someone and having to use a disc.
Destiny's gameplay is meant to be like you can just jump into a.
You mean Destiny's gameplay is kind of emblematic of what they want the next gen of consoles to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All, it's going to be online, persistent worlds, lots of connectivity, lots of multiplayer focus. The kind of things that you see a little bit on the consoles now, but clearly, God. So elitist, but yeah, we've been doing that for years, guys.
Finally catching
up. It's the truth.
Right. And it is interesting you brought up the Xbox One thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too deep into that, but it is a little funny that they're making that big of a deal over online, always on mm-hmm. DRM and sharing games and stuff like that. Meanwhile, the rumors are flying around that Steam might allow people to share games.
I think it's kind of weird that there's such a big outcry for Xbox One when Steam has always done that, like ever since its inception. And there was
it's a different market, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But I don't know. It's an interesting list of games. It was a huge E3. I was very excited to see so many top tier games getting a lot of push, and so many of them already confirmed to be on the PC. So definitely check out Tyler's list on PC Gamer because it's comprehensive and we're updating it as we get more information.
If you just look up every E3 game, it'll probably be the first thing that comes up on PC Gamer. Yeah.
What's next, TJ?
What's next? Why are you asking me what's next?
Because I haven't played Scrolls yet.
Yeah,
Despite begging for keys and being very excited about the game, and I love deck building. I have yet to play it. However, you guys all profited from from all of my hard work, and you've played a ton of it.
Yeah, the rest of us have. And it's for those of you that don't know, it's Mojang's new game. The guys have made Minecraft, and it's kind of a collectible card game. It's tile based.
It's a deck building game, but also kind of a light tactics game.
Right.
Very very kind of. Is it Battle Academy?
Hero Academy-like? Yeah, if we want to go into console territory, I compare it to like the Mega Man Battle Network games almost.
Sure.
It's actually kind of like the Heroes of Might and Magic game that came out a while back.
That's true,
about the vertical game where you have the tiles and you try to hit the little totems.
Yeah.
Like Clash of Heroes?
I don't remember what it's called. But
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you basically have rows with three boxes and your monsters can only attack things in the same row as them unless it's like a special card like a siege weapon or something.
So, what are your overall thoughts on it? This is clearly a very different game from Minecraft. Let's not compare it quite to that yet. But just as a game on its own merits, what do you think? Jake, you start.
I mean, I like it. I'm not really big into the whole like card battle games. Like I played Pokemon as a kid, but in terms of like actually playing any current card games where you actually, like Magic or whatever or Yu-Gi-Oh or whatever, or actual ones like as video games, like the magic games. I haven't played any, and so playing Scrolls was kind of new, and I like it. Like I said, it's hard. It's difficult for me. I can only play against the easy AI. Going against the medium AI, I get waffle stomped.
So you've been playing against the computer so far?
Yeah, I've not played against another player. Usually in a game that has online, competitive play, I usually like to make sure I'm do well enough against the AI that I can beat.
I feel insulted right now. I've played Jake multiple times.
Yeah, he's beat me.
I've telling people he hasn't played any other people.
Oh, well, I mean.
You're a little AI-like. Yeah,
you are. I mean, he's a
robot now.
He's like the hard AI.
We have to flip the switch to turn him off at the end of the night.
Yeah.
Then we turn intern bot back on.
Yeah, there's a charging station and everything.
What do you think, TJ?
Yeah, I've actually, it's interesting because I've had a lot easier time against other human opponents than I have against the medium AI, which might just be the people don't know how to play the game yet, but and the AI that's pre-coded into the game is obviously made by the developers who kind of know what they're doing, I would assume. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a lapsed Magic the Gathering player myself, so I do like, putting together my deck and thinking about, okay, I need to throw a few of these in here, even though, I'm not going to necessarily use them. I need something to burn for mana, because you basically discard cards from your hand to get mana to summon other cards.
Tap and, that mana.
Yeah. We were discussing the other day, though, that it seems like it's kind of missing some card game staples, like traps and reactive powers that you can play when somebody does something else. And
it's not
like
really
that.
As dynamic as other card games like Magic, where
the
flow of the game is really mellow and slow, and it stays that way the entire match. You just reach a critical mass eventually and you win.
It's basically you set up what you're going to do on your turn, and then you watch your opponent's turn, and you can't really do anything on your opponent's turn.
Is that because you guys are you still playing with the basic starter decks?
I played a lot of the trial mode, I think it's called, where it gives you
challenges
where it's like you have to go up against some kind of weird scenario. And I played enough of those to get enough of the in-game currency to buy 3 or 4 random packs, basically.
Right.
So I'm playing with a, I'd say, 15 to 20% modified version of the starter deck at this point.
I think the problem might be, like, the way the game works. It has a energy system that's similar to tapping mana in mm-hmm. Magic. But there's not really that much potential so far from what I've seen to have a turn where you just do a lot of stuff. So like every turn you send out a new monster, maybe you sacrifice a card to get a little bit more energy, and then you can cast another monster that's stronger the next turn. And whereas in Magic, you can stack up all these things and have like this super powerful.
You end up burning through a lot of your deck.
Well, yeah, that's true, I guess. But those are the moments that I like playing Magic for when I
play.
So playing against the AI, I've noticed that they'll get a high amount of energy, and then they'll have somehow, I don't know how, they'll have a high, like a lot of cards in their deck. And they'll do like 6 things in one turn. And that's usually when I'm starting to lose. And so, I think you can get to that point in Scrolls still, but it's just not as, maybe it's not as easy.
I question if it just takes a lot of actual deck customization, right? That might be the trick. Like you start out, and this is where I have failed when I've started Scrolls, is you launch the game, you install it, it pulls everything down from Mojang servers, and then it wants you to immediately select one of your 3 starter decks, and I suddenly hit like analysis paralysis. Like I'm looking at all of these, and I'm going, but this one looks really this fire one looks kind of interesting, and I have yet to.
I picked order.
You picked order?
Yeah.
You picked order?
I picked whatever the green barbarian
growth.
One is.
Be the spoiler.
Yeah,
growth.
Exactly.
Be the spoiler.
Energy is the other one.
No, energy is the one that always demolishes me. It seems like, I'm going to play a catapult and another catapult and a thing you can't kill.
It's like a red deck.
They each have their own strengths. Like order, you're meant to like use combos with units. Like you're meant to put, like there's a general that, decreases the turns of the people around him when he gets to 0, which could immediately make like this big blitz of all your units attacking that are surrounding your general. There's another guy that buffs their attack at the turn 0, and then there's other units that just buff attack or health by being in the same row, and that's where they like thrive. So if you can like kind of master a system where you build your units around other units, then you could do well. Whereas, because I haven't played against a order AI yet, but playing against, I think, growth, they always seem to beat me, and energy beat me a lot.
Yeah. So how do you know how growth and energy are?
No, I'm guessing growth seems to have a lot of buffs.
Growth does, yeah. Growth is like you put out like a really weak unit and then you put like 7 buffs on him and he eats everything.
Like the rabbits. The rabbits always have like 2 attack. I'm like, these little, they multiply.
Yeah, yeah, so. There's a lot of stuff like that. And also
then energy.
And then
traps maybe? Like
energy,
bombs?
From what I can tell, is a lot of like indirects. They're like scorch the earth. Like they have units that do like small amounts of damage to wide areas, and they're hard to kill.
That's probably this is all research, so I know which deck to pick.
Right.
I can probably energy now.
No, energy order, kicks man. My ass Order's constantly.
Awesome. I like order. I like the look of the units and stuff, but
every time I face order, I feel like if I don't win in the first like 3 turns, they have like 90 guys on the field that are just bombarding me.
So talk me through this. So you select your deck, and you're talking about using this as a card game, but then you're summoning units out on a board and moving them kind of like Heroes of Might and Magic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does that part of the game work necessarily?
Well, you can, when your units get down to turn 0, you can move them. Still, without affecting, like,
I think you
how
can move
attack.
Them. I think you can move them once per turn, no matter what.
There's cards that give them an extra move.
They have, the cool. Is it called cooldown?
Yeah,
for the stat. That's basically it determines when they attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like some units have like he'll have like 6 attack, but he can only attack every 3 turns or something like
and then
that.
They also have like special abilities that activate on 0 cooldown.
Right.
But I think the cooldown system is why the game is kind of boring to me.
Yeah.
It's because it arbitrarily slows down the game. Whereas in Magic, if you cast a monster, you're not going to attack because you risk getting attacked yourself. Whereas in this game, they will just attack no matter what. You can't stop them. You can't pause cooldowns. It just arbitrarily makes the game control a lot of the stuff that makes other games more complex. So by doing that, it makes it more user-friendly, makes it easier, and also adds some depth, but it kind of removes a lot of the choice in what you do other than
you're looking for more control
characters.
I mean, you can, like, I was going against an AI and he purposely froze his units to make their turn counters go up so that he wouldn't attack immediately because I think I was like fiddling with my side of the board, and it kind of screwed me over because then he just attacked me.
Wait, can you stop the cooldowns from going down?
You can use, like, you know how the order has that freeze buff or that freeze debuff that moves everyone's turns up one?
Yeah. Oh,
I see. He used that on himself.
So there's no, like, regular way where you can cast spells to do that?
No. And, I mean, there's haste, so you can move down the counters. I think the counters are their own, like, meta, you know, within the game. And that's kind of...
Yeah,
that's kind of interesting. I mean, it does kind of be... It's kind of boring if you don't have ways to affect them, but there's... As far as I've seen, there are a lot of cards that do affect people's counters, and by playing those cards, you can actually really change the outcome, like, really fast.
Yeah,
I think that sounds like debuffs almost, like playing cards that affect other people, like
slows
your opponents. Yeah.
Yeah.
I won a multiplayer match basically by playing a card that set every one of my units' counters to 0, and then on the same turn playing a card that increased all of their attack by 2.
Oh my gosh.
And I was actually way behind, but I just won that turn because...
Wow.
And they have Relentless, which is basically like Trample in Magic, where if they destroy something, they can keep going and attack the next thing behind it. So, yeah.
I mean, this sounds fairly competent so far.
Yeah.
Ben hating it that it's too slow.
It's kind of a simple, slow game from what I can see so far, but I'm sure there's some more depth that we can uncover after we play more.
Right.
Not to mention, I mean, it's a Mojang game, so they're probably going to, I mean, they're going to add a lot. And they could add instant trap cards, you know? I don't know if they haven't yet because they think it's going to debalance, you know, unbalance the game, or...
I'm sure they're watching that very carefully. Because this launched at beta status, right?
Yeah.
It's not alpha.
Mm-hmm.
So, TJ, you unlocked some boosters with the in-game currency. Have you guys...
You started with 2
started
grand,
with some gold
so...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I bought 2 boosters. It's kind of
how much
cool.
are those running?
Is there like a, I think 1,000 each?
They have 1,000 booster pack where you can get a bunch of random cards and 1 guaranteed rare. And then they have individual cards you can get completely random from the entire set that you want.
Yeah, okay. So you can get specific set cards. Yeah. And actually, that's another thing I've kind of liked trying to mess around with is mixing my deck. Like, I've put growth cards in my deck. And now, anytime I sacrifice a card, I can sacrifice it for growth point energy or growth points or order points. And... I don't have a lot of growth cards, but I would like the idea of, like, because there's some that are, like, I have an order card that if I play it, it gives me a growth energy, like, no matter what.
Interesting.
Crossover cards.
Yeah, so it's almost like, there's meant to be some synergy between the decks. I saw an Order player, Order computer AI play a card that gave him energy. Or maybe that was you, Ben. but anyways.
Hard to tell. Ben bought his sound.
Ben bought it. Anyways, it was, I mean, I like that idea. I'm trying to get growth cards into my deck because growth has those buffs. Like, I have a ring item, that an enchantment that boosts one of my characters attack by 2 permanently. So I would love to use that on a character who's relentless and then have him like plow through a couple of units every
time. So you're collecting, you're not just using cards, but you're collecting items as well for
enchantments. They're pretty much like items, and you can use them on any of your cards that are out on the board, and then there's actually cards that remove enchantments too. And you can use them on any, like I've had structures where I used armor on my structure so that I could only get hurt 1 instead mm-hmm. of like the normal, like, you know, whatever attack that the opposing characters had. So I don't know. I like it. It would be something I'm interested in playing a little bit more every now and then.
It hasn't grabbed you necessarily.
No, and I think
it's going to need to do if you have to unlock all of the new boosters and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All of the purchases with in-game currency.
It's pretty slow too. You don't get gold very quickly.
Yeah,
and you only get gold for the first 5 matches you play.
Right.
Yeah. So you kind of have to buy stuff if you really want to get started right away.
Wait, yeah. I'm sorry. You only get gold for the first 5 matches you play?
I think that's what it says
in a day.
In the game.
Yeah.
So the first maybe, 5.
Oh,
matches
to limit
in a day,
the economy.
Yeah. So then you have to end up paying money.
The interesting thing is that the currency you buy with real money,
right?
You can't buy boosters with that. It's just used to buy individual cards.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, you can't just drop $50 and buy a whole bunch of boosters. You have to buy the boosters. You can only buy with the currency you earn in the game.
Yeah. That gives you, which is, doesn't that give you more control over the specific card you'd want to buy, though?
There's
or
like,
are they all like just common cards, really?
They're pretty good cards, but they're, as far as I can tell, there's a slate of like 6 of them at any one time, and you can only buy those 6 cards with the real money currency. I don't know if that's how it's going to be when the game goes live.
This
but
sounds ripe for an auction house.
That could vary.
There is a trading system.
You can trade.
Yeah, you can trade.
How does the trading system work?
I have not tried. You don't have very many cards. It takes a really long
journalism.
Time.
Journalism. I have no idea how that works.
Ben's
well,
my
I mean, okay,
enemy,
you guys have had this game for like 3 days, though.
Yeah.
We're grilling you on this.
The matches take pretty
days.
Long, actually. When I play ranked games with other people, like through the matchmaking system, it takes like 30 minutes to an hour, and 30 minutes
like
is pretty short
game.
For a match.
Although, it might just be because it just came out, but I've found the matchmaking queue is incredibly short.
Yeah,
a lot of times
like
it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's matching you up pretty well?
If I'm against growth or order, I win, and if I'm against energy, I lose. So I don't know what that says about
that,
me.
That tells me that energy might be a little overpowered.
That would be my inclination right now. I think energy is a little
stomped.
Bit overpowered.
All the time, and I'm order, so
as
soon as I can beat the medium AI and maybe play a few games against the hard AI, I will go against other players besides Ben Bot.
You can play unranked.
Yeah, it's true. So that's probably a little bit more casual.
But if you're playing and it doesn't count, like...
Yeah, that's how I think. I just play ranked, whatever.
You're like the most competitive intern bot
like,
I've ever met,
yeah, When Heart of the Swarm came out, I played just unranked Master just for like 2 weeks just to make sure my mechanics were down, right?
Right.
So...
Yeah, ladder anxiety.
Yeah. And once I was like, okay, I think I've got this, then I went on the ladder and got completely obliterated.
That's fun.
So closing thoughts on Scrolls. Tell me now before I jump in, you guys all beat the crap out of me.
It's really polished. It looks good. It works well, but it doesn't seem very fun.
I'm hopeful and optimistic for future content that will satisfy Ben.
Fun, casual game that will probably not become like the center of anyone's gaming life.
Don't think it's the next Minecraft
or League.
No, or even Magic. Duels
it doesn't really add anything new to any of the card games I've ever seen. It doesn't have like a really cool new mechanic that makes everything awesome.
Well, I mean, I could say the same thing for the new season of Magic, though, too. There's not,
actually, that,
there's not
that,
a ton that's new there.
I would like to talk about that because the really awesome part about Magic 2014 is that they're adding sealed play. So that is like a huge deal.
Oh, to duels, yes.
So it actually makes it so you can play with the cards that you're going to be playing with in real life, and you use them in a way that you would in real life.
Right.
Whereas the past games have been like, you get some arbitrary deck, then you find another deck and you can combine them, but
that's,
they don't work together.
That's always been the classic problem with Magic. Yeah. You have these three levels of Magic where you have duels, which is a great way to learn how to play Magic the mm-hmm. Gathering, right? It's a great mm-hmm. tutorial for someone who's never played the game before. You have the paper game. You have the tabletop game where obviously that's where Wizards of the Coast wants you to spend tons of money. Mm-hmm. And then you have and the problem with duels is that the deck building options and the deck customization options have always been so weak.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you have Magic Online where newbie is terrified to jump in there, but people regularly, like professional players, will go mm-hmm. and train there mm-hmm. and practice there and spend thousands of dollars on new cards. Jeez. And so finding a middle ground there that's not just the paper game has always been the big problem.
I think they're definitely moving towards that, but there definitely could be more crossover where they get rid of both and make one. Because Magic Online, you literally pay for boosters that are the same cost as in real life.
Right.
And the only crossover between real life is that you can trade in an entire set. So if you get every single card in a block that just came out in real life, you can trade them for the real cards.
Right.
One time.
Well, that's like impossible. I met with the Magic guys at E3, and we talked a little bit about 2014 and the new duels set. And we talked mm-hmm. about sealed play
yep.
and specifically how they're going to be monetizing boosters in the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they're moving towards, you know, more of that deck customization that really seems like, because my problem with, I've never been a huge Magic player, mm-hmm. but my problem with duels was that you kind of get through the campaign and then, well,
it's over, yeah.
What do you want to, like, I guess I can play some games with some friends, but it never felt as competitive yeah. as the game probably should. So you're already thinking that Magic 2014 is still the game to beat.
It's not ideal yet, but sealed play will be a huge draw for a lot of people because okay. you get a lot of chances to play sealed games.
Yeah, especially like if you look at the difference between Duels 2012 and Duels 2013, it wasn't that big of a step up, and the difference between 2013 and 2014 is, you know, considerably bigger.
Actually, adding a mechanic that everybody needs.
Right. Boosters. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Magic 2014, which I think comes out in July.
Next mm-hmm. Wednesday on Steam.
Okay, mm-hmm. there it is. And then Scrolls, which is out from Mojang, which is $20?
I believe it is.
I think it's $20 yeah. right now to get into the beta.
Yeah, so.
I think that sounds right.
Cool. And,
yep, just like Minecraft, it'll give you access to the actual game when it gets out of beta. So there
cool,
you go.
Cool.
We have some listener questions this week. As always, you can leave your own listener questions at our podcast call-in line, which is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, or pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. We actually went out into the Twitter sphere this week to grab just some rapid-fire questions from you guys.
TJ, the kids call it the Tweeterhood.
The Tweeterhood?
I don't know if you know that.
Like Twitter sphere.
I didn't know that.
It's not the Twitter sphere anymore.
I'm sorry. I'm getting so old.
That's what someone yeah. on Pinterest told me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're on that. Pinterest hood? The Pinterest?
Let's move on.
Indeed, let's move on. So the first question we have is from Sean. He says, now that XCOM is out on the iOS, much to the delight of our editor-in-chief, Logan Jury Duty Decker, what mobile-exclusive game would you love to see on the PC?
I have a very specific answer to this question, and it's Warhammer Quest.
Really? Yes. I haven't played that yet.
So Warhammer Quest, not that this is an iOS podcast, but Warhammer Quest is kind of a board game conversion for the iPad. I guess it's on the iPhone as well, but it feels better on the iPad, of an old board game. Did you guys ever play Hero? Well, you guys are probably too young for Hero Quest.
I played Warhammer Quest. You let me play that.
Oh, yes. That's yeah. the first day I made you play it. So Hero Quest was kind of made by Games Workshop and Hasbro or Milton Bradley, whatever it was back then. And mm-hmm. it was, if you've ever played like Castle Ravenloft, the
yeah.
board game,
mm-hmm.
it's that same sort of feel where you're laying that, you know, you're moving through a board. There's a DM who's like putting down doors and tiles and monsters and controlling that experience. But then you're a party of like four adventurers. There were later versions that Games Workshop made, and they specifically started tying it into their Warhammer fantasy universe. So Warhammer Quest on the iPad is that experience. iPadified could be the word that we use for it. And what it ends up feeling like, it has a lot of great flavor text, but it feels like a great strategic tactics-based dungeon crawler which is something that I think the PC desperately needs. Like, there are lots of action RPGs, there are lots of Diablo clones, but I want something that's a little more strategic, where I'm actually moving on a grid, picking up loot, fighting monsters who kind of come out from, you know, the ether, just from, you know, random mm-hmm. dice rolls.
Yeah.
I think this would be killer, like a killer $10 game on Steam.
Yeah, I would actually give a similar answer. Like, there are a lot of those tactical, almost kind of roguelike, you know, we have Dreadmoor on the PC for that, but it would be nice to see more and more varied versions of that. I don't play a lot of mobile exclusive games, so I don't know that I could call one out specifically, but genre-wise, yeah. I definitely agree with you on that.
What about, I was going to say, I don't play many mobile exclusive games either, but I would like those, you know, like Game Dev Story or like those little.
Right.
Yeah, like those. Those would make for some, you know, nifty little, like, just smaller games to play.
And we're,
PC.
I mean, we're seeing some of those simulation games start to come out.
I like the idea of that. I mean, they're kind of like, you know, you kind of just affect them a little bit, but they do stuff on their own.
Yeah.
I would like to see some of those maybe come to the PC. It'd be pretty easy, I feel like. But, you know, I'm fine with them being on the phone too.
I think the problem with going from mobile to PC is that. When you program for mobile, you design a game for mobile, it's completely different from sit down, just play games experience.
Yeah. Sure.
So I don't think...
There are very few of those that would translate to a mouse and keyboard pretty well.
Because my favorite mobile games are games that I can play at a bus stop or on a shuttle or on a bus and play for 5 minutes, stop it, come back later, play for five more minutes and still have fun. PC games or any AAA games in general need to have like an hour chunk to be enjoyable usually.
Sure.
So.
I would like to see some of the other... board game adaptations that have come to the iPad, you know, some of those I think you really could translate to the PC.
Board games.
Agricola just came out. That would be. I've always wanted a PC version of that because it's a great game to sit down with your friends and play, but it takes a while and it's very fiddly. So the best part of having a PC version of that or the iPad version that's out now is having the computer take care of all that. That scorekeeping for you.
I feel the same way about a lot of Fantasy Flight games. Like Arkham Horror, I stopped playing Arkham Horror because it's just too much micromanagement of cardboard pieces. And
and these games would fill a really cool niche. You know, in pick your digital distribution, Steam or Gamersgate or Origin, of $10 titles that like you'd impulsively buy because you'd just be like, oh, that'd be kind of fun, right?
Yeah, I played Risk for PC like, I don't know, 8 years ago or something. I remember that. I was having a blast with that. I'm like, I don't have to set up with friends at the table anymore. I could just play my PC.
I don't have to actually go look at people and be around other people.
That's not what this is about.
I really did enjoy playing with friends and stuff, but it was nice to have like a quick game. I mean, quick is, you know, up to for debate, but having a game of Risk, just I didn't have to like gather a bunch of people together for.
Someone should make a board game playing machine thing. That would be awesome, where it like takes care of all the problems for you.
Well, if you think about like that would be my.
Hang on, are you trying to get more machines like you?
We need more bedrooms.
The problem with board games is that you have to get out the box, get out the board, set everything up, follow the score, and follow the rules, and make sure you're not breaking rules, and consult the rule book, and do all these things.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds exhausting.
Well, I mean, it's exhausting. It's really, I really think that that's an ideal application for stuff like Surface.
Yeah.
You know,
Sure.
If you could just have a giant
Surface.
Like
a
Surface table.
Just have a table that does everything.
That just runs a bunch of board games. That would be pretty awesome.
Sure.
It'd be awesome for D&D.
Yeah.
Our next email comes from Mark, and he says, AMD versus NVIDIA at Intel given adoption by major consoles and expected future CPU... Mark, I need you to use punctuation. I know you're constrained to 160 characters, but you gotta.
Yeah.
The crux of his tweet in the Tweeterhood is, "Where's Steambox?" And that's an interesting question, right? Given this new console landscape, where's Steambox?
Yeah, it's. I mean, we didn't hear a peep about it really at E3, which is kind of a Valve thing to do. But it's not just Valve building Steamboxes, so I think we would have heard something from someone about a Steambox.
I mean, maybe it went into hiding because, you know, we have these next-gen consoles popping up, and it's like, I'll find another time to come out.
Yeah, Valve doesn't like to share the stage, for sure.
Plotting in the shadows. Yeah. It's gathering backers for its plot to assassinate.
TJ, do you think there's room for kind of third-party Steamboxes?
You know, I could see a market for it. Probably not the core, you know, PC gamer listener slash reader audience, but I think that there is definitely there's a middle ground of gamers who would buy a third party Steam box in place of a console if that was an option,
or maybe even call it just like a home theater PC that plays games or
right.
something like that.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely there's a segment of the market that would go for that. I think it's a viable thing for
yeah.
sure.
I saw at E3 the Alienware has a box that looks very much like a black box console. It's going to mm-hmm. sit right beside your kind of AV equipment, I can't think of the word, receiver, mm-hmm. and fit in your living room, but still also be a PC with a full size video card.
Yeah,
you know, hook it up to the internet, play Steam in big picture mode.
Yeah,
and it seemed interesting. My you know, my big concerns were how upgradable it was going to be.
But right.
I mean, I think the killer app for a Steam box is going to be something that's much more plug and play than that.
I think Steam box as an idea is kind of outdated and coming too late in. The grand
really?
Scheme of technology, because what we're moving towards is streaming stuff. So the appeal of a console is that you pay $500 or $400, and then you have a machine that will last you 10 years. And you never have to worry about fiddling with it, installing drivers, updating things. So the real appeal of a Steam box would be you have hardware that will not change, runs with like really efficient games, like games that are made specifically for Steam box, like
right.
consoles. But then the problem with that is that it defeats the purpose of like PC gaming in general.
I mean, it's exactly what OnLive wanted.
Yeah, right? I feel like the future should be where Steambox isn't a separate thing from your PC, but it's like Shield, except not a controller.
Right.
Where you have your games coming from your PC streamed to your Steambox at your couch. And then you don't have to worry about drivers and things that handles on your computer. And then you just use big picture mode to play your games.
Sure.
I feel like that is what the Steambox should be. And that might be why they're struggling to come up with anything right now, because they're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the problems with streaming games like that is for, you know, competitive shooters and things like that, it doesn't work because it adds an extra layer of latency and people
yeah,
just
but
don't
like,
want it.
People aren't going to play competitive games on a couch.
I don't think a Steam box
that's
is really aimed at the competitive
that's,
market.
No, that's true.
You so. Can just play some Call of Duty, but you're not going to be worrying that much about playing at the peak
sure.
on
yeah.
your couch. So,
sure. So the next question we had is from Peter, and he says it's actually not a question, but a request for discussion about the potential of trading games on Steam.
This is the big rumor this week.
Right, which is, it's interesting with the news coming out that, you know, Microsoft is basically backpedaling with the Xbox One. They were going to do something similar with, you know, the changing how they distributed games digitally and how used game sales work. Personally, this would benefit me because I have a whole folder on Steam called I Will Never Play This Again. And even if I could just get like $2 to $5 for each of those games, I could probably buy, you know, 3 or 4 new games on sale.
Well, is the I want to explore what constitutes a game that TJ wants to burn with fire, but let's come back to that for a second.
Just delete the file.
Let's just hang on
yeah.
to that. Yeah, right. You could possibly just never, you know, just uninstall that and never think of it again. But
right.
okay.
That's
we've
right.
gone to an extreme. Is the trading of games on Steam, is that really trading them in and getting credit for them, or
yeah.
is it trading it to your friends?
I don't think it's trading in and getting credit, because I feel like that could be exploited somehow. But
I mean, it's an organizational nightmare for
well,
Valve.
Yeah.
The thing is, if they're going to allow you to swap a game for a game, I don't know why they wouldn't let you basically say, you know, what? I will swap this for money from your Steam wallet. I mean, it seems like kind of the same thing.
Well, what if it's like they swap it? Well, I feel like it'd be hard because, you know, it's just data. But what if they swap it to somebody's Steam account and then it's temporary, like it's marked? Because, you know, Steam has temporary, like,
mm-hmm.
playable games. So it kind of does something like that, but for the other person.
Like Steam borrowing. Like
yeah.
Borrowing
yeah.
Well, they already have that already, guest passes. You can some games come with guest passes
yeah.
and give it to your
but
friend.
So
it's very
for, like,
few.
So it's like guest
it?
Pass for
can
everything?
Can somebody
you can
go
get a guest
over...
pass for, like, the ship. Congratulations.
Yeah. Red Orchestra 2 had guest passes, I believe.
So I think like doing something like that where you can like pretty much give a guest pass for any of your games to a friend, I mean, you guys think
that
is that
really
be?
Solving any of the problems? Because the problem is that like you play BioShock and you want to give it to your friend to play.
Yeah.
So you guys don't have to pay twice.
So you do that. You give
Which
them a guest
bad
pass.
It's bad for Steam and bad for the developer and the publisher, but good for the two friends.
Yeah, good for like...
But like,
I guess.
Why would Steam do that then? Is they just cannibalize their own...
Well, what's the benefit of trading a Steam game back for credit, right?
Because then they can control the margins even further. Like
they're doing the same thing that GameStop does with console games, where they're creating a secondary currency that people can use to buy new product. GameStop's argument has always been that the reason why the used game market makes sense for publishers of new games is that it creates this new currency that players who don't want to, you know, use their credit card or actual funds can then, they say, I forget the number now. It's something like 70% of all used game trading credit goes towards new product, whether it's hardware, software, accessories, stuff like that. Whether that's true or whether the publishers care is outside of the scope of this, I guess. But for Steam, it's different because you're talking about, I mean, they're already selling games for $5. They'll take a game that launched 3 months ago at $60, and they'll sell it for $10, and they'll push that volume. So then, do you trade that game back in for $5?
I think that's a big problem with Steam because of the way they have sales and stuff. So there would be a lot of people who would wait and literally maximize the profit or like how much they lose to get a new game. Whereas at GameStop, you're kind of screwed either way because you get ripped off when you sell it, and then you get ripped off when you buy it, no matter what, pretty much. So
it's an interesting system. I should point out that there are a couple of online retailers that have systems that are somewhat close to this. There's a website called Green Man Gaming that does trade-ins on digital games. Whether you want to do that or not, I'm not endorsing anything, but I don't know. I almost feel like this is a rumor for Steam that they're just putting out there to capitalize on the console nonsense going on.
I think that's probably what it is.
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised to see it. I don't know.
If anybody could pull it off, right?
I mean, Steam can do things no other entity in the no universe can get away with.
Sure. So. And it would open an interesting door for the publishers that have their own platforms, Origin, like Uplay.
Yeah.
There is an idea for publishers to start recouping on this whole draw towards a secondary market.
Right. But then, you know, you'd have to wonder about like sites like GOG, where they just give you a DRM-free copy that, you know, they can't take that away. I mean, they could take away your right to download it again.
Well, as we record this, Good Old Games has about everything in their catalog discounted heavily.
That's true.
Yeah.
Something tells me that they're not as concerned about taking in those trade-ins. They just want to sell you these old games as cheap as possible.
Yeah, that's true.
And spread the love.
So we also have a question from Robert on Twitter. What are some good unknown and underrated PC games, indie or otherwise? That's like that we could fill a whole show with that. Yeah.
Let's limit this to two choices.
Oh, geez.
That's probably going to be 10 minutes of dead air as we all try to decide.
unknown and or underrated.
You're not allowed to say Crusader Kings 2.
It's more of a cult hit now, so I'm not sure if it qualifies as unknown, but Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines comes to mind if you've never played that. It was not super highly rated when it came out because it was really, really buggy, but there's community patches out that not only fix all of that, but you can download mods that add completely new quests and change the way the gameplay works. So that's probably my number one pick as far as games that a lot of people I know have not played.
Sure. I would point at, and this is, it's not a game that I would suggest anybody run out and play right now because it's probably going to be a real pain to set up and put together, but Tachyon the Fringe. You can probably find it on Steam for like $5 right now, but it was a space sim, kind of not as epic in scope as Free Space 2, but along those lines, and it's kind of a guilty pleasure game of mine.
I could just pick. I mean, I talked about one last or the last podcast about Avernum or Exile made by Spiderweb.
Right.
Those are both. That's an excellent series. Like, especially if you're into RPGs. And especially if you're into like old school RPGs, because I mean it's definitely dated looking, but man, I've sunk countless hours in Avernum 3 so far, and I still haven't beat it.
And the first Avernum was just recently, like in the past couple of years, re-released, right?
Yeah, I mean, because you know it was Exile before, and then they've been re-releasing them as Avernum.
And Spiderweb put out a version that uses that Abaddon engine.
Yeah,
Abaddon the Black Fortress.
Yeah, which is awesome. So they're releasing games on iOS too, which is pretty cool. But anything from Spiderweb, pretty much, you know, if you're looking for a lot of or some really cool indie games, and they have demos for pretty much all of their games, and they have sales all the time too. Right. It's also another game I played as a kid by Ambrosia Software. I don't even think they really make a
they
whole
make
lot.
They make a lot of Mac stuff now.
Yeah, yeah. But they had this old game called Escape Velocity, and it was pretty much the first moddable game I played. And you play as a little spaceship, and you just go around this star map. Going to different planets and trading and eventually upgrading your spaceship into, like, you get these huge battleships. And I had a lot of fun on that, too. I could still have a lot of fun on it if I re-downloaded it. I think they have a demo as well. But, yeah, those are two really
are
old
obscure.
Games. That, yeah, obscure, and they don't take any, like, you could play them on the crappiest machine ever and just fine. So you wouldn't have
probably
to worry about
not
that.
Worth playing anymore.
No, they're great.
Yeah.
I don't usually
Ben Butt disagrees with obsolete technology.
So I don't usually go out of my way to play unknown games because I'm busy enough playing all the games that are available now, like League and Dota and Counter-Strike and all those things. But I think there's a lot of indie horror games that get lost in the limelight because of the big hits that come out, like Slender and Amnesia and stuff. But there's games like I'm Scared.
Oh, yeah.
Just by some Italian dude.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool in what it does. And
it's not the name of the company. We just can't remember the Italian guy's name.
That's the name of the game. So it's like it's a really weird horror game where
it
creates files, like actual files inside a directory. And you can open them and they change and it has like instructions and the game changes as you play.
Huh.
It's really interesting. And it's kind of a game that's hit or miss sometimes because you need to play in the right environment and stuff. But there's a lot of indie horror games where they try something new or they're just really good, but people don't see them because there's 5 million of them now.
Yeah, I'm Scared, which is all one word. And yeah, that whole file creation thing is, I played that this week. It's really creepy.
I need
the
to
website
check
you can download it from has a lot of those. I don't remember what the website name is, but
maybe we,
like,
can link that in the show notes.
Yeah,
or something.
There's like one hub for indie
games. It's like Indie though. Hub or something, but it's
maybe
creepy.
Indie DB or something.
It's creepypasta style. do you have another game? Or, you know,
No,
really? And you're the only one who did too.
Nice job, Jake.
No, we were going to limit it to two, and then we all went with one, and you had to just own the mic.
Yeah,
for
just,
20
you know, because I guess you're twice as important as the
that's,
rest of
that's
us.
What interns
for
do.
For the worst games, man.
Intern A.
Our last question comes from, is it Nathan? Our last question comes from Nathan, who says, how does everyone think the upgrade cycle for PC hardware will be with the new consoles releasing? Will it be like last gen? So how will the new consoles affect the hardware cycle on the PCs?
As far as the
feels
high...
Feels like it's the reverse way.
As far as the high-end hardware, I think we're already going to be pretty far ahead by the time the new consoles release. So I don't think it's really going to affect the release cycle of, like, the top-tier enthusiast video cards and CPUs. I think they're just going to keep doing what they're doing.
Sure.
I could maybe see it affecting the mid-range in terms of cross-platform games being made with higher system requirements, but... You know.
Maybe in the short term.
Yeah, at least in the short term.
I mean, if this turns out to be another 7-8 year console cycle, eventually, you know, it's going to be a moot concept to begin with,
right,
whether the consoles are ahead or the PCs ahead. I am excited about the idea that, I don't know if Sony announced this, but definitely Microsoft was talking about the Xbox One pushing 4K monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think that will help push 4K into the forefront for consumers in general, which means don't judge me.
dude, that's gonna be awesome.
I'm gonna come up with a robot-like nickname for YouTube. But the idea of having broader acceptance of 4K monitors so that we get those on PCs first, and there are a few now, but they're pretty hard and they're pretty hard to find and they're pretty pricey, right? Mm-hmm. So seeing those come to the PCs faster will be a small benefit. I don't know if it's going to be exactly like the big thing that we get out of it. I think it's cool that the consoles have 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
I like that so many of our PCs probably have like 16. That makes me feel better.
But the implications of that is, you know, games that are designed for cross-platform will be able to have bigger textures, larger levels.
Right.
So, you know, that'll be cool to see.
I think that the new generation might actually affect video cards a lot because AMD has kind of come out and said we're cool with just being the mid-range, like working with the mid-range on PCs, and since they have the APUs in both consoles, they're set on like their financials. So like Nvidia is like the only company now that's making really super high powered cards like the Titan. And so it's kind of like diminishing returns for them almost because the market is just them. So they can like control it themselves.
Well, yeah,
so they might not need to try as hard or make products that are as good.
It's definitely a different strategy.
We might get another one.
It also means that super, super high-end video cards are probably going to get more expensive. Mm-hmm. If AMD is just like, we're not going to compete in that space.
Maybe. NVIDIA's like,
so we're just
going to
charge you $1,200 for ours because if you want the best video card, that's right. NVIDIA card.
Maybe someone else will rise up to the challenge and take on NVIDIA.
The spoiler.
Some random company that comes in. Qualcomm's going to jump in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's our graphics card.
Hey, they sent us that box. I think
ultimately the new console generation is going to be a good thing for PC gaming. Mm-hmm. Anything that pushes it along, not that we were suffering beforehand, but competition's always good, right?
Right.
And in competitive markets, the PC has typically done PC gaming has done typically really well.
Yeah.
So I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Totes.
Moving along into playlists, Corey, what have you been playing this week?
Oh, not a lot. I mean, does Excel count as a game?
InDesign.
We've been playing a lot of InDesign. Yeah, we posted a couple weeks ago about that guy that made an entire RPG in Excel.
Right.
Yeah.
I've actually tried that. But then I got caught actually playing it, and I had to go back to the real instructions. I have been playing a lot of Neverwinter over the past couple of weeks.
Really?
I'm kind of the MMO guy around here, it seems. I haven't been able to get the rest of you guys excited about MMOs or join my one-person guild, which is called Land of Sadness. I love what Cryptic is doing with Neverwinter. I have not traditionally been a fan of most of Cryptic's games. I think Star Trek Online had a lot of interesting systems that didn't gel very well. Neverwinter is a step in the right direction for them. There are still too many levels of currency available. There are way too many fiddly bits of currency that players have to worry about for buying different tiers of armor or weapons or equipment or crafting. I should say that I've been crafting all day through their online their webpage portal.
Mm-hmm.
All day.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Can craft.
I'm sure Logan's not going to listen to this, so he won't know. But yeah, you can craft without being in the game because the crafting mechanic feels very much like you're going to select what components you're using, and then it takes real world time to create those items a little bit like Farmville.
It's like Eve, kind
of. Farmville.
So I've been doing a little bit of that and a lot of playing at night. And I have about, I guess my main character is about level 30 or so.
Nice.
So
I played a little bit and I got to about 7, and then I was like,
but, am I the only one that doesn't have beta access?
It's out now. As of today, it's officially out.
So
you could just jump in and get it. The other game that I would give props to, and I haven't spent more than an hour with this, but I really want to play more of it, is The Swapper, which is an indie game that came out about a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fascinating puzzle concept where you're creating up to 4 clones of yourself to get past different challenges, you know, typically like hitting the right switch and then being able to walk through. But the narrative structure to the game, it's very morose, very, very somber and kind of brings up some ethical considerations about cloning and death and that sort of thing, which sounds really joyful when you say it like that. But it's a brilliantly made game so far, and I don't think I'm too far from the end, actually. I feel like it's probably about a 3-hour game, and I'm about an hour or so in. Hmm. So I think that's about $10 right now. You can find that on Steam.
Hmm.
Interesting. Cool. Ben, I know you were playing the Fighting With Our CSGO server game yesterday.
Yeah. So we had a community event on Wednesday, whenever this podcast comes out, but we ended up hosting the event right as a CSGO update came out, so our servers died halfway through and people couldn't join anymore or something.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, I guess I could talk about the community stuff really quickly during my playlist since I've been playing most of those games. And Jake and I have kind of been spearheading a new community effort with PC Gamer where we're setting up servers that will hopefully be updated all the time and we'll be running mods that people want to play and maps that people want to play on.
And what games are you targeting?
Right now, our big hitters are probably CSGO. We have 2 servers for that, Arms Race and Classic Casual, with all the workshop maps in there. And we've got Battlefield 3 and Rising Storm and a Minecraft server as well. We've also got a huge list of other games
Yeah.
Does Evan know that you have a Rising Storm server running? Because he'd be in that 24 hours a day.
I think Evan's been busy lately. But yeah. So we have a lot of servers up. We have a post online right now with our complete list of servers, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But
probably the easiest way to find that is to join the Steam group, right?
Yeah. So we also have a Steam group with like 50,000 plus people or something.
So just search for PC Gamer and Steam Community.
And you'll get event notifications for Steam games in the Steam community as well. But going back to the playlist, so I've been playing CSGO for the community stuff, fixing servers, especially in the office, and a little bit of Scrolls. And I've been playing a lot of Dota. I kind of go home, play Dota, and then it's like 12, and I need to wake up at 6.
Dota 2.
Yeah, Dota 2.
Okay.
And then I have to go to sleep, and I'm tired for the rest of the day.
Who's your favorite hero in Dota 2?
I think Shadow Fiend.
Correct answer was Axe.
No, Timbersaw. Timbersaw is a cool.
And that's the last
cool
time
hero.
We heard from Benbot.
Benbot, shut down. I've been playing, besides Avernum, which I'm still playing, I've been playing some League, which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Who do you play in League?
Oh, Jace, top. Or Singed, top. Or Singed bot as support. Or Jace bot as a bruiser carry.
Jake
really
is better than
way.
I expected. As someone who's played a lot of League, he's not bad.
Thank you, thank you. That means a lot coming from you, Ben. but
always
that,
top?
Top's my jam. I've tried jungle in the past. It's Warwick,
I love jungle Warwick.
Jungle
really
Warwick's
do.
Fun. You jump on people and then you just, go at them. But and mid lane, not really. Yeah. But yeah, so besides League and Avernum, Scrolls, I've been playing, trying to play that. And I've been playing a lot of games that I've been finding online for this list I'm building. Which, one of them was I Am Scared. It's actually not going on the list because it's too long.
That's why you talked about it, because you don't want to spoil the rest of the list.
Yeah, exactly. But,
right?
No, but I'm Scared is, I tried playing that. This is just creepy.
It's really weird.
Were you scared?
Really I was. There's also this other game called Witch, which is super scary as well. It's Witch with an H.
I need to check these out. I love indie horror games.
Right. Yeah.
And
oh,
all their
my gosh.
And
yeah.
Forms. Yeah.
I didn't
for
like
sure.
Witch. Witch was...
What are you playing, TJ?
Yeah. Well, other than my usual staple of Crusader Kings, still some Rising Storm. It's probably my favorite competitive shooter since, Arma 2, probably. I've said it on the podcast before. It's a good balance of kind of like the realism that I liked about Arma 2 and then kind of the more fast-paced gameplay of a typical online shooter. And Scrolls, I mentioned. Also, Marvel Heroes really starting to grow on me.
No.
I've seen a lot of criticisms of it on Twitter, and I took some time to warm up to it, but I'm actually enjoying it now.
Okay, so what hero did you choose first?
I chose Hawkeye out of like the starting five.
I don't even know where to begin with you.
He was the one that... What?
Hawkeye?
Hawkeye's awesome.
Clint Bart, have you read the Ultimates?
He
killed like seven guys with his fingernails.
And to be fair, I like the new Hawkeye series.
Yeah.
The comic book series too. Okay, so you picked Hawkeye. We're just
gonna
skirt past that for a second. What level are you?
I'm up to like level 8 now, I think. The one thing that I still do have to criticize about the game is that the monetization is just terrible. I was like, all right, I'll go in. Like, my favorite Marvel characters are Thor and Wolverine. So I was like, I'll pick them up. I'll just call it price of admission. It's a free-to-play game.
Sure.
It's like $40 to get those two characters, 30 or 40 bucks to get
each
those two characters.
Each or total?
So for both of them.
That's
it's
ridiculous.
Like, well, you can only
buy... Because, Iron Man right now is like $35 in in-game currency.
It's a Microsoft Space Bucks type model where you can only buy their currency in chunks of like $10, $20, $50, or $100.
The
you
worst.
Can't just be like, charge me for whatever this hero costs. And the heroes like range from like $8 up to like 30-something, and the costumes are... somewhere in the 10 to 20 range.
And when it gets right down to it, the costumes are what you really want because
they
do have some interesting selections for costumes.
They do.
But they cost a bunch. And
from what I can tell, you can unlock, I don't know if all the costumes are unlockable through playing the game. Characters are unlockable through playing the game, but it's like you have to fight these daily bosses and they only have a certain chance to actually drop a new character and then it might not be the character you want. So it's like, if you want to play the character you want...
You end up with, like, Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rocket Raccoon or Squirrel Girl or something like that. Right.
Squirrel Girl's so, not bad. I don't want to get into this right now.
Isn't it
but
weird seeing the same heroes? Like, I was watching you play a little bit, your Hawkeye running around, and there's a Hawkeye right behind you.
Yeah,
like,
that's weird. But
it, for the record, the narrative kind of explains that. Okay. Or it tries to explain
it. It does. It's sort of the same way DC Universe Online tried to kind of explain why everyone had
everyone
powers.
Looks vaguely
now.
The same.
Yeah, and that's kind of annoying for sure. But I've had some cool moments where it's like I'm just getting my ass kicked by a robot or something, and someone playing the Hulk just like jumps in and demolishes everything. Sure. Thing is like, okay, nice. That was a cool
that was my other question. How much have you played with other people? Because I feel like if I had like a dedicated group of people,
right,
see, who jumped in, I mean, maybe we played over a weekend.
That's what I see as being a big part of the potential of that game, is having a group of four friends. Like, we're just gonna roll as the Avengers and we're gonna mess stuff up. Like, I feel like that would be the ideal way to play this game.
Exactly what the Avengers do.
Yeah, exactly.
They mess stuff up.
They basically just they break
care.
I saw the Joss Whedon movie. I see how it
goes. Exactly. Yeah, so I wish the characters either weren't so expensive, or if there was like a way to kind of save up in-game currency towards the character you want instead of just having a random chance to maybe drop the one you want, would be nice. But in terms of the gameplay, I mean, it's almost like any other action RPG where it's boring at the beginning, and then once you unlock enough of your abilities, it starts being fun.
That gives me a little bit of hope. You know what, so, TJ, you've turned me around a little bit. 'Cause now I might actually go back and I've put 1 hour into it.
First four or five levels, I was like, plink, 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 plink. This is really boring. Plink. And then I start unlocking.
Which is really how Hawkeye shoots, too. He's like, well, just it's looking at a second screen.
Yeah, well, then I got the dodge roll, which was really my criticism of the game. Is like, I need a mobility power of some kind. This doesn't feel superhero enough because I can't move around. But
and then about five levels in, it gave you one.
Yeah, and you know, I've got my freezing arrow for single stronger enemies, and I've got the stun shock chain lightning thing for bigger groups of enemies. And
just takes patience.
Yeah, it's you know, the story is very more like kind of classic comic book, almost tongue in cheek, as opposed to like the new Marvel universe.
It's not Civil War.
Serious business, right? Yeah. So. But, you know, I'm having fun with it.
Okay.
Marvel Heroes, I'd say check it out. It's free.
And that's out right now.
It is out right now. So that's probably going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks for listening. Remember to go on PCGamer.com, check out our new list of community servers, join our Steam group so you can be updated on when we run official community events on those servers. Call in, leave your questions, 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, or send them in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you guys all next week.